Basically, what Facebook's done is they're moralizing. They've said that their, you know, community sentiment is such that this isn't something that they want to take ads for. And this is incredible when you look at, you know, Zuckerberg out in Silicon Valley talking about, you know, the importance of, you know, clarity and you know, free speech, or running Super Bowl ads here in the U.S. talking about how important Facebook groups are.
Welcome to the Multi-Amory Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
We believe in looking to the future of relationships, not maintaining the status quo of the past.
So whether you're monogamous, polyamorous, swinging, casually dating, or if you just do relationships differently, we see you and we're here for you.
On this episode of the Multi-Amory Podcast, we're speaking with Amanda Wilson and David Epstein, the co-founders of the sex-positive and non-monogamy-friendly dating app, Hashtag Open. So, as our listeners know, online dating is hard. It's a hard world. It's something that we talk about occasionally on this show. And creating an app for online dating, I would say, is even harder. And so today we're excited to talk to both Amanda and David about some of the challenges in creating an app like this, what they're doing to try to make online dating better, as well as some of the challenges that have come up with that, and also some kind of real world talk about the world of online dating and what's going on there. So Amanda and David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us. We're really excited to be here as well.
Yeah, so I wanted to start out just with the elevator pitch for what Hashtag Open is. And I kind of want to hear, what I'm curious about is, like, what's the pitch that you use when you're describing the app to people who are kind of already, let's say, bought in, like already part of a non-traditional relationship or community or sexuality or identity or something like that, versus how do you pitch or describe the app to someone who, like, is totally new to any of this and had no idea non-monogamy was even a thing?
That's a great question. You know, for the people that are already bought in, I think the elevator pitch is really letting them know that the tools have been built for them. You know, setting your boundaries and talking about your interests and your preferences, you know, that's so important. And those people that have bought in, they've also bought into the communication aspect side of relationships, right? And that can be hard. I know words are not always my best friend. So, you know, we built in tools inside of the app to make having those communications as easy as possible. You know, we have a section right there to where you can state what your hard limits are. And again, you have words aren't your friend, being able to state that right there and, you know, not ever have to really have, you know, a conversation further is useful for a lot of people. So I think that is the pitch for those that are bought in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we've tried to do, certainly, really for folks who do understand sort of consensual non-monogamy and the framework around and the ethics around those choices, or people who maybe are curious about and looking to explore it, we've tried to create a process where coming into the app and coming into the app community gets, as Amanda said, people to think about their preferences, think about what their boundaries are, and start to understand that communicating them is a must, right? So everybody who comes through the app process agrees to really like a code of conduct within the community. And that's really all based around, you know, negotiation, inclusion, consent, and making sure that your experiences are something that, you know, that you're doing with really an open eye and open to communicating. And these are things that are good in any relationship, but especially good in a non-monogamous relationship.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I'm curious to know a little bit more about, like, the origin story of kind of how this whole journey started for both of you.
Well, we can start with me. I moved to the Northeast about 6 years ago and met David 5 years ago, and had, you know, a couple years of dating, call it platform experiences, right? Because I did them all.
That's the best like euphemism I've heard for like going onto the online dating app grind ever. Just, I've had multiple platform experiences.
Yeah. Well, and I remember when eHarmony was, you know, a bubble sheet that you used to fill out and actually mail back in, and then they would mail you your 10 preferences or your 10 you know, matches for that month. I've been around.
Did they
a while.
Give you like little cards with faces of the people, and they're like, "Hello,"
like baseball cards.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So, you know, I had all of this experience, and as David said, we're kind of early adopters, so we would get in on those, you know, Tinder and Field and stuff in the very beginning, and would see how people would come into the community and then how it would change with people trying to, you know, do different workarounds with different things, because, you know, all these platforms are really trying to push you into, you know, one of two binary boxes. And if that doesn't fit you, because there's so many people that doesn't fit for, you know, having options to meet that.
You know, Amanda had come, as she said, from the South, a single mother who had built a career in Republican politics, and came to the Harvard Extension School basically to study like democratization. And, you know, in getting there, I know that you felt like it was like just a rapid fire learning a new culture and new ways of people interacting. And I remember, you know, we met, was it a year into that experience for you?
Yes.
And a half in? We started to communicate. We met on an app that was definitely catering to people that were outside of the sort of more norm, and started communicating, and just started communicating very clearly with each other, very honestly with each other. And that was really refreshing for both of us. And that's really, you know, it was that process that kind of gave birth to the app, I think, in many ways.
So were some of your initial messages to each other like, hey, you're cute, this app sucks, let's make a better one, and here we are 5 years later?
Yeah, were you non-monogamous at this point, or are you, or interested in it?
You know, I would say that I came from a very traditional background, and monogamy was always just kind of the style that I was in, because I didn't know anything else, and, you know,
it's like the default option.
Yes, this is the default option. But then as I started, you know, really meeting people outside of where I came from, and just talking to them, just realizing that there are other ways to do this, and better ways. Monogamy, I think, is great for anybody that, you know, consciously chooses it, but that's the difference.
I mean, really what had happened, you had created a profile in this app with another person that you hadn't met, but you had done that kind of to create some.
Well, the difference is for females inside of these apps and males are quite different, right? And so for me, saying no is it's not something that I like to do, and so constantly having to say no to so many people was just becoming challenging. And so I did create a fictitious partner in order to.
It was a virtual partnership.
Virtual,
and they weren't fictitious, but it created a virtual partnership and was looking to meet, you know, other, you know, individuals to explore, but you're really a soul agent, as everybody is.
Yes. We're all individuals coming into these partnerships.
But the answer to the question, that app, it exists today, and it is popular in the space. We felt for a lot of reasons that we wanted to do things a bit differently. It's definitely a tremendous amount of work, and we've had a lot of fun and have built something really incredible, but it's hard.
And just because I'm curious, this app you're talking about, are you talking about FetLife or Tinder, or what is this app?
Well, so we met on what is now known as Field. It was known as Thrinder back then, but has been renamed.
Right. And so Amanda, you were like a single female profile on Thrinder. And yeah, okay, I see. So just getting like a lot of messages and things like that. Mm-hmm. Happy to say that. Okay, that makes sense. Now I have more context. I'm like, okay, yeah.
Yes.
I
get you.
Hence the need for a virtual partnership.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
So you alluded to this a little bit, but I'm interested in what your research process was behind building the app, because there have been, like, I guess between 2009 and 2014, OkCupid published a big study kind of done on their demographic preferences of some of their the people who are using their app, and it talked about race and attraction and also demographics and attraction and various things. And they did say after their initial findings that they made major changes to improve their product for everyone who is using it. So I'm just curious, did that influence the way in which you made your app? What other things potentially influenced the findings that you had and your app in general?
I mean, hugely, right? I mean, you talk about mm-hmm. dataclysms all the time.
Yes.
Right? Are you referring to the dataclysms work and study?
Hold on 1 second. Dataclysms is probably the best word. Probably
that's
like
awesome.
The second best word that I've heard in this interview. Second to what? Multiple platform experience. Now it's dataclysms. You got to explain that.
Yeah, so dataclysms, OkCupid was started by four mathematicians, and one of them wrote a book just on all of the data that they have collected and trends that they have seen throughout OkCupid over the years. So, and it's absolutely fascinating. I recommend it for anybody.
And was that scary. The name of the book?
Yeah.
Okay,
there it is. Yeah.
That makes sense.
And I think that is the initial research that OkCupid published that you're referring to.
Right.
So, you know, based on their observations of human behavior through their dating platform and really through, you know, through the first year of our relationship, you're reading that material and sort of looking at at the time, I remember you were studying like cybersecurity and this fictitious hack that the Soviets might do on the Ukraines, and talking about Facebook, and like, lo and behold, this is exactly what was happening, right? Mm-hmm. So you take, you know, the observations and dataclysms about OkCupid and dating, and now you apply it to Facebook, and you look at the fact that whether it's Field, the app that we met on that uses Facebook for login, or it's Tinder or every other match product, that, you know, 99 out of 100 dating platforms out of there are directly meshed with the Facebook data engine, and then look at a book like Dataclysms and imagine.
Right.
And that's really a big part of why we did this.
So yes.
What were some of those then design choices that you made based on that for your app to try to make it different from those?
Well, based on you know, Amanda's concerns around the data privacy issues, and in particular concerns around the potential for people to weaponize that data, we knew that we had to write a privacy policy that kept our database sacrosanct. So we don't share with any third parties. We don't use any third party login or authentication. We don't have any data exchange that we get inbound or outbound, other than checking the telephone number database to assure that we're using a cellular phone number, and that's really for fraud purposes. But we don't, unlike any of our sizable competitors, we don't share anything with Facebook. We don't share anything with Match. We don't share anything with Procter & Gamble.
Well,
oh, good.
That's very unique and lovely.
Yeah, so
very refreshing.
Yeah, that kind of leads into my next question, you know, that, you know, you really intentionally wanted to kind of avoid that crossover and that sharing of data and things like that. So, you know, I do feel that, like, when we're talking about the non-monogamy dating scene specifically, this arguably niche, maybe arguably not niche dating scene, and I think that over the years we've seen a very noticeable shift in how non-monogamy has entered mainstream conversations about dating. You know, there's definitely been a few other attempts at making dating apps or sites or meetups or things like that aimed at non-traditional relationships. You know, we've seen, at least I've personally seen, an explosion of people online identifying as polyamorous or non-monogamous on more mainstream dating apps like Tinder. You know, I mean, there's an op-ed in the New York Times about the explosion of couple profiles on Tinder specifically. We've seen things like a couple of years ago, OkCupid, you know, expanding their filtering and profile systems to be more friendly to non-monogamy and a variety of different gender identities. And despite that, you know, there's definitely still a lot of people in the community frustrated by a lack of options, you know, and I think combined with, I think a lot of people also starting to feel fatigued by dating apps. And so I wanted to know from the two of you, like, when you were setting out to make this app, what were the things that you felt were, like, really, really missing, maybe still missing right now, and that you felt that, you know, hashtag open could offer that was different from everything that was available at the time?
Well, I think, you know, at the very basic level, the biggest difference is, you know, hashtag open was built by users for users. So, you know, it did take the experience that David and I had. It, you know, now incorporates the experience of all of the other women that are on our team. So when you're building it with those things in mind, rather than trying to build it to collect data or to, you know, for some other kind of reason, then you're not really truly allowing people to be as authentic as they really want to be. I mean, people want to be themselves. They want to show themselves that is a process, you know, for them. But you know, we just really wanted to build a platform that again was for the users and always had their privacy and their security in mind from the very beginning. You know, rather than it being an afterthought, you know, we put those resources that we could into, you know, making sure that we were as secure as we could be from the beginning.
You know, Amanda put forward some challenges as we were trying to design the initial offering. And like the first one was, I don't want people to have to choose labels. Mm. Well, okay. You know, we get that. But people also, they like labels. And so, you know, how do we mesh this? And so we made a decision across the boards that in every area where the app might ask a user a question, they had the option not to answer that question. They also had the option to customize that answer. And just, you know, using that as a design approach across the boards has enabled us to realize, you know, close to 10% of our users identifying outside the gender binary. You know, we've got about, I think it's about 54% of our users are currently identifying as male or cis male. About 35% woman or cis female, and the balance is outside that spectrum. And that, I don't know if that would have happened if we didn't give people the flexibility of labels. And we're seeing that in a bunch of places.
Yeah. Do you also apply the same approach to, like, you know, how people define their relationship status? Because I know that was also a big thing. You know, when OkCupid made their big shift to suddenly become more non-monogamy friendly, that I know that a lot of people felt that it also kind of fell short because it was kind of the same thing of, like, I'm still a little bit trapped by a box of, you know, essentially like the two or three or maybe even four max options of how I can label my relationship.
So we do, we actually have four categories of sort of statistics that we publish live on our website each night at midnight. And those are the gender breakdown of the user community and the choices that they're making from the sort of pre selected options, and then other. We have orientation, relationship style, and relationship preference. And again, all of those have the ability to take custom labels. And with time, we'll update those lists, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm curious about how were those lists generated in the first place, and is there a process in place? Because I know that, like you said, with everything, there's some set options, but you can also choose your own. I'm curious, is there any kind of a process in place for a choice kind of entering the main list or perhaps being removed from the main list based on choices or ethical concerns or anything?
Choices.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, so the short answer is yes, in that we're continually developing and we always have the ability to update things. The longer answer is everything is more challenging than we ever would have imagined.
Yeah.
And so, you know, depending on the sort of, I mean, we can get, you know, almost anything done, but it's a matter of time and money. And, you know, one of the reasons that we don't see a lot of options in this space is it's a challenging space to attract investment, and it's a challenging space to promote that which you have, right? So what we have today has, like, oodles of room for improvement, but we have to also get what we have today out there into the marketplace. And you know, we agree and believe that there's tremendous demand, but you've got to be able to reach those folks. So there's some chicken and egg, I guess.
Since you brought it up, I am curious about that. And we don't necessarily have to go here, so, you know, stop me. But I am curious, like, you know, is this something where have you been seeking investment? Because I imagine that must be just such... That was kind of why I was curious about the elevator pitch, is because I imagine that, like, on the one hand, when I think about, like, Silicon Valley venture capitalists, I'm like, oh, they're all non-monogamous, which is kind of maybe an assumption. But then on the other hand, also when you're trying to, like, get investment for a product like this from mainstream, quote unquote, mainstream sources, like, there's an inherent challenge in that. What's been your experience with that?
It's been exceptionally difficult to, you know, we being also sex positive and relationship positive, means that, you know, for Facebook, that is just too outside of the box for them. And Facebook really seems to be the leader for, you know, all the other companies. So, because we have been denied by Facebook, which is also Instagram, and Reddit, Snapchat,
Twitter.
Wow, the investment. Reddit? Really?
Yeah. Well, Reddit, what Reddit did initially is they, we submitted an application and they said that they wouldn't take it on the basis of, you know, they tend to put us in the mail order bride category, or the Ashley Madison, you know, paid cheating sites, that they wouldn't take our promotion. And so we went back and said, well, you know, this is really quite odd. Why are you taking promotions from Field? It's really the same thing. And sadly, because this was not our intent, but literally 15 minutes later, Field was no longer there.
Wow.
You know, this is
wow.
It's all related to FOSTA and SESTA, really, is a big part of it.
And we've heard of an ongoing petition happening surrounding this. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, I filed a petition and it has been signed by over 2,000 people currently, but basically calling Facebook out on their censorship and also their hypocrisy.
I mean, basically, what Facebook's done is they're moralizing. They've said that their, you know, community sentiment is such that this isn't something that they want to take ads for. And this is incredible when you look at, you know, Zuckerberg out in Silicon Valley talking about, you know, the importance of, you know, clarity and you know, free speech, or running Super Bowl ads here in the U.S. talking about how important Facebook groups are. You know, one of the things that Amanda points out, you know, in her petition is that there are hundreds of thousands of people on Facebook who explore various forms of consensual non-monogamy. So it's just crap.
Yeah. I wonder where he gets that from, or where whomever gets that idea that, you know, the user doesn't want this, or that that's the consensus from the user. Like, where I have no idea where they're getting that from.
Neither do we.
Yeah, and I mean, just to rope our listeners in, you know, recently you have been getting some news coverage about this, like Business Insider. I know a couple other outlets did a write-up about this. That it really has been this kind of mind-boggling thing that, you know, the response that you've gotten from Facebook being something along the lines of like, well, the this is not what the community wants, and also that the community's not ready for any kind of casual dating, which is like a statement that I can't even wrap my brain around. Like, I just really can't wrap my brain around this idea that the community's not ready for casual dating, first of all.
But Facebook dating's not casual.
Right, yeah, exactly. Combined with the fact that, you know, as you also have pointed out kind of in your campaign around this, that, like, you know, more mainstream apps like OkCupid have posted ads that are, you know, sexually suggestive in nature, you know, obviously nothing explicit, but that they have suggested, hey, you might use this app to have sex with somebody, you know, and that's a good thing. And so why not try it out? Combined with, you know, Facebook, of course, also, you know, authenticating like logins for Tinder and stuff like that, which is, you know, last time I checked, Tinder did not have the reputation of being only for like long-term soulmate relationships. So it really is this really, really interesting, really, really fascinating thing that I think, especially for what the two of you are trying to do, which is like a sex positive app that's not just about hookups, that's also open to non-monogamy, polyamory, stuff like that, that the knee-jerk reaction would be so strong in that direction.
Well, and it is interesting, you know, you posed the question earlier about investment, and we have self-funded this. We've put everything that we have into it and been fortunate that we've been able to borrow, but we don't have traditional corporate backing. And, you know, frankly, would like to avoid that, right? We have a privacy policy that's not attractive to venture capital, right? Venture capital wants to invest in selling, in building a database and selling it. Well, if you read our privacy policy, you'll see that we could never really sell hashtag open in that way. Our interest is in building a set of tools, and we'd like to see others do the same. And we think some are doing this, but building a set of tools that'll serve a community that's underserved and then being rewarded for doing that. I mean, that's a really good long-term business model, right? You know, 10, 15, 20, 25% of our users might be happy to contribute, you know, a latte a month or a chai a month or whatever their thing is, for a set of tools that are, you know, built with efficacy and transparency. And but if we can't get to them, we can't do that. Mm. And that's really that's why the petition. And, you know, we were really excited. That article and frankly, some mentions within Facebook drove over 5,000 new profiles this weekend, which for us is huge.
Oh, wow.
Just massive.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah.
So silver lining for sure. Now, yeah. I think that approach that you're taking of like, we're not just trying to build a database and then sell it and get VC money and stuff like that. I do think that's the correct approach. It does make me think that I do think there is kind of an irony though, that like once you're able to prove that a community is a market and that you can sell to them, that's sometimes another domino in the chain of acceptance, right? Which is, I mean, awful, you know, it's late stage capitalism at its finest and stuff like that. But that is like, I think kind of the weird struggle and weird irony, you know, and it's definitely brought up some weird feelings for me as I've seen other more mainstream apps or other people trying to launch like a more traditional VC, you know, funded kind of dating app for non-monogamy is this idea of like, well, this seems like a cash grab, but then at the same time, in our capitalist society, it is an indicator of like, ooh, this is a legitimate group of people because you can sell to them.
It's a huge opportunity, and we're capitalists.
Exactly.
We just, you know, but we also have a long-term view, and we would love to provide a set of tools and have a team that builds those tools for years and years to come. And it's a community that looks for those kinds of solutions, but definitely the big players. I mean, in the year that we've been doing this, we've seen their sort of pivot around LGBTQIA plus, like, you know, I mean, you know, our gender and orientation diversity is not as unique as it was a year ago. And that's great. It's a good thing. And, yeah. And that's because of what's going on in the culture. It's got nothing to do with us.
Right. Totally. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about
kind of the monetization stuff, as well as more about the security stuff that I think is really interesting. And then we want to get into kind of talking about some of the like ethics and politics of online dating and some of the choices and things like that. But before we get to all of that, we want to take a quick moment to talk to our listeners about ways you can support this show to help it keep going if we're providing something that gives you value. And if not, then feel free to skip ahead and listen to the rest of it.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I at AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI.
So to go back to this question of money, right? I know that hosting a database and hosting like the infrastructure for an app, as well as the marketing it and all of those things cost money, and they can cost quite a bit of money, and they cost money every month. It's not just like you spend once to make it and then it's done, right? It's something that is an ongoing expense. And so I'm curious about, you kind of alluded to it a little bit, that your eventual kind of monetization model for this would be what? Like a premium features kind of thing, like OkCupid, or that the whole thing would become paid? Because I do think that like the thing that made OkCupid unique in the beginning was the fact that it was free, you know, and that you could use almost all of it for free. And that's still true, right? And I do think that's really interesting when at the time it was competing against Match.com, where you had to pay to do basically anything at all, right? Besides create the profile, if you want to do anything, you had to pay. And same with eHarmony and, you know, all those other kind of big like mainstream apps. And that was kind of what made them different. And so far, hashtag open feels similar in that it's free. And I'm just curious, like, what are your plans moving forward in terms of cost and things like that?
So scale is ultimately the challenge. We've always believed that the basics have to be free to everybody in order for it to be a viable community. And frankly, we kind of feel like pretty much everything we're doing now is the basics. We obviously want to do them better. And we've got, you know, I think 900 tickets in our system of ongoing bugs, and that number just, you know, continues to roll. But so the basics always need to be available for the community, and especially in this community, because we know that a lot of people don't have the kind of resources to be both, you know, open about the choices they've made in their life and necessarily able to do that everywhere. What we are a Delaware B. It's not called a B Corp. What's it? A BLLC?
Oh, is it not an LLC? But yeah, Delaware is the way to go. because you don't have to pay taxes.
And especially if you have no revenue. If you have no revenue, you have an extra double tax credit. But we're what is the equivalent of a, it's called a B Corp. We have to go through the entire process of certification, but our mission includes reinvesting back into the community that we serve. And that, you know, that's really something that you've taken the lead on.
Yeah, what does that look
like? Yeah, exactly. That was one of the things in your mission statement, and I found that to be very interesting, because that's not, the idea of community, I don't think, is very large in Field or, I guess, in OkCupid or any of that, and you really care about giving back to the community in various ways, so I'm very interested in what that looks like to you.
Well, and, you know, becoming a B Corp and just really having the ability to remember that, like, our mission is the most important thing. As David said, we are also capitalist and we have to have money to make this thing, you know, go forward. But being, you know, marginalized, and that includes women, right, is... already a, you know, a hurdle, right? Just in your life. And so, you know, anything that we can do to potentially put money back into, you know, research, right? And as David was saying earlier, you know, as far as like money and big money, people aren't putting money into kink research or, you know, maybe BDSM can cure the common cold. We don't know because, you know, nobody's really out there putting the money in there and researching that specifically, right?
And basically what the B Corp structure does for us is enables us to create, to your question about revenue models, incentives for more and more people to participate and support in the project. So let's say we approach the community at a point later this year and say, listen, it takes following to support this effort. We're going to keep investing, but we would like those that can to support and give back. If you can participate at this level per month, you will receive this following digital badging. You could receive these additional enhanced features, you know, some right now that are under consideration, you know, would be potentially things like Last Active or potentially knowing who's already liked your profile. Although, again, we talk about those, there are pluses and minuses, but a set of enhanced features at a very modest monthly recurring rate. And when we reach 10% of our user community doing that, we want to make the following donation to the Woodhull Institute, as an example, to really just use things that will drive growth back within the community and resonate for the community.
That's great.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
The question is, when can we do that? And our feeling has been that we need to grow a bit more to do that, that the interactivity needs to increase a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, at least for me, in terms of, you know, in terms of looking at the dating apps out there, and that of everything I've seen so far that's actually got off the ground, that Open is the first one, or hashtag Open is the one that seems like the first one that has options besides just being overly sexualized or just about couples looking for women to have sex with, which, you know, Field kind of fell into that trap. And I know that I know people who have met partners and have had good relationships through Thrinder or Field, and you two are an example of that. However, I know that most people's experience with it is like, oh, I liked the idea, but all it is couples looking to hook up with someone. And like when openminded.com did their bid for trying to make an app that was very much like, we're going to, you know, sell your information and also put it on, you know, Trump lovers who date, and also on, you know, John McCain lovers who date. We're just going to like sell it to every dating niche site out there.
Oh my God, Chase.
No, I'm serious. This is a real thing. There's this whole network of dating sites for certain niches where all the data is shared between them.
It's all shared. Is John McCain I'm going to make that URL of just johnmcainisforlovers.com.
Oh, I see. John McCain is for lovers. That's good.
Rest in peace, John McCain. He was my Arizona. Represent Arizona.
Sorry, Jace. Please continue.
Anyway, yeah, what I'm trying to get at is I appreciate what you're doing, and I think that hashtag open is sort of the closest toward that that I've seen. And I agree that having a user base is always the problem with any startup dating app, that like you've just got to have the users so that it's useful to people, so there's people to meet. I do know, however, that I've found in looking through it, it does seem like there is kind of also a lot of this like looking for hookup thing. And as someone who is maybe less, at least I feel less than average, like motivated by sex compared to some people, or motivated by kink, I have experienced a little bit of frustration being like, okay, like, is there any way for me to make this search better for that, for people who are, I don't know, looking for something else besides hookups? You know, I think there's value to both. And just,
or who are even asexual, or it's something right along those lines.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, again, we feel like we built the tools to allow our users to really state what their end game is, so state what you're looking for. That should be allowed, right? If you are just looking for somebody to hook up with this weekend, and that's the only reason why you're on a dating app, you should be able to say that, because there's probably right somebody else who just wants to hook up for this weekend and never talk to you again, too, right? David and I have always said that, like, if we could just get the exhibitionist up with the voyeurs, then, you know, everybody is happy. And this is part of what hashtag open, I think, will really do. And if it really works well, it's going to make all of the other dating platforms work even better, too, right? Because by allowing our users to state what it is that they're looking for, other people are going to find them, and they're going to do that based upon what their interests are or what kind of experience it is that they want to have. So, you know, if they are swingers and they just want to have, you know, one night, they should be able to say that. And there will be somebody else that will meet that. So, you know, taking some of the importance off of the labels, and again, you know, I know people, if you like them, you like them. If you don't, you don't. But taking some of, you know, the importance off of that and really bringing it back down to, you know, what type of person is it do you want to meet? What type of relationship do you want to have? You know, I call it a relationship choice approach. But if you know going into this that you want to have a, you know, XYZ relationship, and you put that out there, well, then you're only looking for other people that want to have an XYZ relationship too, right? So it allows you to find each other, hopefully, in a more authentic way, because, you know, dating is also changing, right? We're no longer in an courting system, right? Dating mm-hmm. is changing, and dating is different for everybody, and we should be able to just say what that is for us, and then find someone.
You know, one of the things that we notice as we look at those daily statistics is how quickly various things will change. As an example, over the last few days, the percentage of people within the database that identified as polyamorous went from 21% to 26%. That's huge, right?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that particular profile surge came largely from the poly community, and you would see more profiles that are going to reflect those values. But at the same time, there is a lot of space and a lot of overlap with the kink community, or at, you know, thankfully at this point, with the general population.
Okay, so something I'm curious about. So say that our listeners are listening to this episode right now, and they're going, huh, this is interesting, I'm going to try it out. If they're like me, it works pretty different from other dating apps, and there's a little bit of a learning curve. And I'm wondering if, you don't need to go over the basics right now, because I think they'll figure that out, but some things about, like, so you put down different like hashtags of either things you're looking for or that you're open to, or what are your hard limits, things like that. How does that affect the results you see, or do you have to search intentionally for those? Just kind of like, what's, can you give me kind of the tips of like, how do you actually use the platform the best?
As you come into the app, you decide whether you want to create a solo profile or a partnered profile or both. At the moment, partner profiles are limited to two individuals, but we're very much committed to expanding that as resources are available. It's a current design limitation. And as you create your profile, you know, it's got some elements of a traditional dating app where you're adding photographs and some sort of demographic information, if you will, all of which is optional, and you control at a very high level what's seen and not seen. Really, through the research, you know, and numerous books and discussions that Amanda had and others on the team had with people around the right ways to set up an expression of sort of wants, needs, and desires, if you will, we take you through an interview process asking you to think about your preferences, things that you're open to, and there's a hashtag list that you can pick from. That list has been growing, and that's a very imperfect system, and one that needs editing, but it's there, and it does serve to help people think about what they're open to, what they're interested in. And in fact, all of those lists, you can sort of custom name them. Those are just suggestions.
And one thing to note and point out, our sign-up process does take a little bit longer because we don't use Facebook to you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, normally Facebook would kind of go ahead and pre-populate some of those things in there for you. So it does take...
Yeah, all the apps that we've talked about.
It's worth the extra time not to share any data with Facebook, in my opinion. Yeah.
And then at that point, your profile is available in the community, and you know, based on a set of boundaries that you'll enter around what sorts of profiles you're interested in seeing and being seen by, and distance and some age parameters. And you can further filter those by the hashtags that we just talked about, if you want.
Searching by them.
Yes. Yeah. So in effect, so if you were, let's say you were looking at a grid of people in the New York metro area, and you wanted to look at people who specifically had hashtag BDSM or hashtag polyamory or hashtag rope, you apply that filter, and now you're looking at folks with that hashtag. And one of the things actually we do when you do a search is we don't only show you people that you've matched or that you've liked, we also show you folks that you've passed on, because when you're doing a search on a hashtag, we think it's worth sort of seeing what you might have missed.
See, that's
more of a visual
pass.
Kind
of get a second chance on the
yes, always.
If you're searching specifically for something that they've put. That's interesting. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah. So, you know, we're about coming up on time here. And what I want to ask is, you know, you're making a product for a community that is extremely diverse in variety, as in, you know, everyone from people who are asexual and polyamorous versus maybe I'm just monogamous and kinky, or I'm only BDSM and aromantic, you know, and as well as like the whole palette of like gender identities and sexualities and things like that. So you're making a product for a community that's both really diverse and I think also extremely picky at the same time. Like, are you pulling your hair out all the time? Because I feel like I would be, you know, I feel like even for us with our show or with the things that we write or produce, you know, that it is just this inherent challenge of like a community that spans a lot of different identities. And also they have, I think, very high standards for mm-hmm. what it is that they want and expect.
And, you know, we have built upon that. We have, you know, a set of community guidelines that everybody has to agree to before coming into the app. And then we hold people accountable to those things. You know, we have a moderation policy that has been built with the help of Jacqueline Friedman, who is, you know, great. She just had a book that came out. But, you know, really making sure that we have like this human touch to our moderation. And we actually, you know, to this point have had no problems, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really great question. What I've seen at Pride Parade after Pride Parade, or you know, various expos and events that we've gone to, is people come up to Amanda and hug her and thank her for the ability to express themselves. And you know, earlier we were talking about why we did this and why we've been doing this, and actually, you know, meeting on that app for both of us was a process of sort of self-exploration and discovery that changed our lives. I mean, it dramatically changed our lives, and we felt like and feel like that's what this technology can do for people and bringing them together. And so, you know, we used to talk about kind of jokingly, like, if you grew up and you were always kind of interested in clown tipping, this fictional thing where sleeping clowns get tipped over in the night.
Right.
We call it clown tipping, but for clowns. Okay, got it.
And you had all the shame of growing up being into clown tipping, and one day you go out there and you meet another person and you really don't care how they identify. They're into clown tipping. You all of a sudden just have this magical moment. And that's, you know, that's one of the great things that the internet has been able to do for us, and that these apps, we think, if done, and we're not suggesting we're doing it, right? We have one take on it, and, you know, we're all over the place, clearly, and we're trying to get, you know, too much done with too little time and resource, but if they would go a little deeper, they could be so much more powerful than this crud that's out there, and connecting clown tippers, and that's cool.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a really wonderful note to end on for now. So if people want to know more about your app, and also if they want to sign this petition, where should our listeners go?
Well, they could come to our website, which is #open.com. And we have links on there to the petition.
As well as the app in the Apple App Store and on Google Play. There are about 45,000 users right now worldwide, mostly here in the U.S. And on our site, there's a whole lot of sort of statistical breakdown information about those users, which we're really proud of, the diversity, which has come from our team, from wonderful community ambassadors that we've worked with, and from great feedback that that we got from our initial 5,000 beta users as well.
Excellent. Excellent. So thank you so much, David and Amanda, for joining us today. We are actually going to stay on with David and Amanda to talk a little bit more deeply in our bonus episode for our Patreon subscribers. We're going to be talking a little bit more about some of the technical stuff, some security stuff, some of the inner tinkerings of the app itself, as well as maybe talking about online dating ethics in general. So we would love to hear from all of you listening. Have you used #open before as an app? What was your experience? How have your experiences been on other dating apps? We'd love to hear from you. The best place to share your thoughts with other listeners is on this episode's discussion thread in our private Facebook group or Discord chat. You can get access to these groups and you can join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share with us publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can email us at info@multiamory.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 678-MULTI-05, or you can leave us a voice message on Facebook. Multiamory is created and produced by Jace Lindgren, Emily Matlack, and me, Dedeker Winston. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio Balvanera. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our production assistants are Rachel Schenowork and Carson Collins. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.